Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my name's Nick.
Hello, I'm Woogie.
We are the Mouth of Manliness. This is a podcast all about mental health. But it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Woggy here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth of Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. This is a part two episode.
Oi, oi.
We are back with She Supreme. Yes. Hello, Tracy. Hello, Jenna.
How's it going? Hello. You're right.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for coming on again.
Thank you for having us back. Jen and I always speak in unison, but never the same word.
I thought like we kind of touched on some really lovely stuff last time, but it'd be really good to know, I think, if on this one, just, you know, find out a lot more about what you guys do and the sort of areas you explore within She Supreme, I think, and then how that feeds into sort of our mental health conversations and stuff. I think that'd be nice.
Yeah, so you want us just to go into, I guess, the premise behind She Supreme and, so I think Tracy and I were talking about this the other day, and we were sort of going into, the motives behind it in our heart-to-heart, and we just felt like there needed to be more space to sort of celebrate excellent women of color, especially queer folk, sort of the under-celebrated people out there or underrepresented. I think from our own personal experiences, we were just sort of seeing in our own workplaces, you know, marginalized people not getting celebrated enough. So we thought, to hell with it, let's bring in people who we think are really, really stellar and did some magical things despite all the systemic barriers. So yeah, so far we've had an amazing group of people that we've spoken to. Lee was our first guest, Lee Butts, who's a good friend of Tracy's. Tracy, if you want to go through,
they're friends from London, actually. We met through mutual friends, and they started a company. They went to Oxford, and then they started a company in Germany, which was basically about future cities. It's called District. I mean, they kind of just catalyst from there, and we've seen them grow like over the last, they made 3 years, invited to all these huge conferences. Their company is doing incredibly, just a huge, huge role model and someone who, I mean, speaks to a narrative. I mean, so basically Lee was, when I met Lee, they were a lesbian and then recently come out as non-binary, so change the pronouns to they and them, which is super interesting. It's super interesting to have a friend who you know, transitions to different pronouns, because you have to sort of reframe the language you use. And that's really it's something that I haven't experienced before. I don't have any friends who I've met before they made the change. So that's been like a really interesting journey for them, and seeing how, as a CEO of a company, how the rest of the company received that. And also because they work largely in like future cities, it's very real estate heavy, which is predominantly, you know, heterosexual white men. Seeing them like older guys, like seeing them like struggle with the pronouns, that was super interesting.
Yeah, and
I think one of the things that was really stand out from what Lee was saying was that they encountered a lot more openness than they were expecting. Some, you know, very older white men sort of just speaking to them about like, okay, what sort of pronoun should I use? Just out of interest, can you explain this? Not explain yourself to me, but just I'd love to learn more about this topic just so I know more and I can approach it better, which is really, really wonderful to see people like opening up to, you know, not just dismiss something because it's different to what they know. They're open to inquiring and sort of expanding their horizons. But yeah, Lee was one of our amazing guests. And we've also had Kenny Ethan Jones, trans activist, model, entrepreneur, dog dad.
Kenny was the face of a menstruation campaign in the UK. Yeah. I mean, I think it was international, but it was really big in the UK. So I think you probably would recognize him if you saw it. But it was super interesting, like men with periods and things like that, which was he was the first to come out like that, which was really cool. And then we spoke to Raga.
Yeah, Raga, who is now a director at a big-time agency here in London. So here's to getting promoted. And Raga has a really cool sort of work background. She's Afro-Arabic and she's
born in Tokyo.
Oh,
wow, really? That's amazing.
And she is just like, we were talking about this on the podcast, and she just traveled all around as a kid, and her family are from like the four corners of the world, you know, something that Tracy and I identify with. Yeah. So it was really cool to have her on the show to sort of talk about like, where is home exactly when home has been everywhere?
We spoke to, I mean, there's this woman named Anna who Jenna actually studies with at London School of Economics. And Anna is super interesting because she's kind of like the Carrie Bradshaw of the Philippines. So she's the sex writer.
Oh, really?
But what's cool about her is like she does the sort of GQ thing, but she also does like activism, like so basically writing about sex through activism and like, you know, child brides and sex trafficking and all this sort of crazy stuff that, you know, politically divisive as well, especially coming from the Philippines. So she's really, you know, breaking barriers. But she had a child when she was 24 and was married and did the traditional Catholic thing. And then decided at one point she woke up and just saw, I'm not happy. And then she got divorced, raised the child alone and continued her career. And then at like 41, I think she said she is now, decided she would sign up for a master's in gender and sexuality, which is where Jenna met her. And she just moved to London to do this grad degree. And she was just talking about how you don't often see the modeling of women who are, you know, over 40 that you know, give you this lease on life. Like, your life isn't over. You haven't just, like, decided your path. You can actually continue to grow and change and all the different the different paths that you can have available to you if you're just interested in trying something new, which I think we don't see a lot of.
Exactly. Cool. Like, she is just a testament because I think there's, oh my God, there's so much pressure, whether you're man, woman, non-binary, wherever you fall in the gender spectrum, there's so much pressure to have a certain job by a certain age, have 1.5 children, be married, have a mortgage,
settle down. Meanwhile, she's like in London, still like writing her sexual experiences and like getting on the apps and like a whole reinvention of self, which I think is fabulous. Mm.
Yeah, totally. And like, she's just like done all of these incredible things in her life, just sort of like you know, she's written her own story and sort of like tackled everything in her own time. And she's like fierce, very fierce.
Yeah. So, and then we spoke to Anu.
You just get blown away by that, don't you? Like, this is why I like doing this podcast, because you talk to people and their stories are amazing. And it's just like blows you away, and you would just never get to hear it otherwise. So it's just so great hearing, like, just talking to people about these amazing stories of their lives, and like that kind of idea of hope as well. You know, yeah, you're 40, but you've still got, you're only half, you know, you're probably not even halfway through.
Seriously, we've spoken to some great people. Sometimes we feel like we're not honored, we're not worthy. There we go. Yeah.
No, but it's true. It's like, you know, we see ourselves as if we, you know, you're asked at like 15, like, what do you want to be when you're older? You have this very like linear projection of self, but we live like a dynamic life where we reinvent ourselves every few years. Often our friendship groups, you know, change every 5 years. You're surrounded by different people, and you're sort of a different person every so often, you know. The decades really are changing who you are. So there's no reason that you should sort of conform to this perceived self that you dreamt up when you were 20.
I think Amen. That's a really good point.
Are you trying to break up with me, Tracy? Oh, sorry.
Oh dear.
You get new friends every 5 years.
Yeah. Time is ticking.
Is this a message?
I think it's really true, actually, because I found myself like when I was younger, you always thought that the people you're around are the ones forever, and then you soon realise that sort of toxic relationships appear, or you just change as a person, and your expectancy of like of the day to day switches from the person around you, and that's not a bad thing. And I think as you get older, you actually tend to ride with it a bit more, and therefore gravitate to people that are on those same vibes, I think. And it's
absolutely, you know, yeah, like totally.
Yeah, I think it's when you get a bit older, you kind of know yourself a little better. Yeah, and course. I think that's why people make big changes, because they kind of like the person that they were trying to be is not necessarily the person who they really are. So then they're like, no, I'm going to be me now. Now, because you feel more confident.
And I think if you then pull that into the context of the fact that if you're, you know, you're deciding to make one of the biggest changes in your life is to change your gender or change how others, your perception, your outward perception to other people. I mean, as a CEO, I can't. It's difficult enough having the perception of being the boss, right? So to then be like, well, this is also my new version of me, and how you how you should change around people is a challenge in itself.
Yeah. It's a bit easier.
Yeah, of course. And with Lee, like they were CEO when they identified as, you know, a lesbian woman.
Right. Yeah.
Young also, they founded the company when they were like 22 or something.
Yeah.
So already getting, you know, your self taken seriously.
Yeah.
Is hard, and then to change your pronouns as well, and to continue that like professionalism, I think it's quite a challenge.
Yeah. I think it can also, but what my experience with some of my friends and as well, it's enabled sort of the gender pay gap situation, which has always been a thing. It's like slowly, surely that should start to become a complete fuckery, because if someone's gender is so now specific to them as a person and not just an assumption, then how could you possibly tie a pay bracket to it or what someone's job should be? And it's doing fucking massive things for the economy, I think, as well. So it's so multifaceted. It's going up.
Yeah, for sure. I think people are really sort of interrogating normalized gender roles, like the woman stays home and rears the child, and that's it for her career.
Yeah, right. I mean,
clearly we know that like doesn't work. No. So,
and maybe the man wants to stay home and take care of the kid. Exactly.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and also when it comes to the gender pay gap, you also see a lot of it is about self-limitation. Like, yes, there is systemic like changes and issues, of course, when it comes to hiring or whatever, but ultimately women are much more apologetic in nature, and you often see women will if we are like, you know, 90% qualified for a role, we'll think, "Oh, but we're not 100% qualified, so we shouldn't apply. We don't have a space there." Whereas you see men tend to be like, you know what, I'll give it a shot. Like, I've got half the things, like maybe I'll get lucky, or maybe I can put myself in the race and let's see how it goes. And, you know, if we are able to dismantle those like gender norms and that gendered thinking, then also that will allow for us to equalize the pay gap.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And even, I guess, the big topic of imposter syndrome, like so many women or marginalized groups just generally are sort of, their confidence is like beaten out of them from a young age, you know, told not to do certain things, they're told not to wear certain things, they're not smart enough, they don't belong. You know, if somebody says something to you enough, you're going to believe them, whether or not it's true. So I think there's a lot of like scrutiny we need to sort of place on like developmental issues as well as it relates to gender ID.
Of course.
I think that's really an interesting thing that maybe we should look at.
Yeah, it needs to go right back, doesn't it? We need to go right back to, you know, how we nurture children and how they get started.
Exactly. Education is so important. If you can't really fix people when they're past the point.
No.
We're just broken. They're just babies, you know, and they're so impressionable. Yeah, we have to nurture the babies and tell them they're great.
I think what's been sort of, especially in the UK, like in sort of suburban towns and stuff, though, you notice that there's I might touch on this in the previous episode of ours, but there is certainly a fear factor within sort of satellite communities of anything that's different. And unfortunately, that then does bleed into their children, and it's synonymous with racism. It always has been in suburban white towns in the UK, right? Back in the early 80s, late 70s, they nicknamed it the Great White Flight, that everybody sort of left inner London, and it left diversity, and then all went to sort of Essex and Kent, effectively. there is truth in it that obviously people. They ladder climb, so therefore they can afford bigger properties outside of London, and that's what they did. But with it, they also took any potential hope of diversity, and therefore being open to...
Yeah, some of that's down to economical things.
It is, of course it is.
Like the white people could probably... They had better jobs, so they could afford to go there.
Yeah, of course.
And I was watching this documentary about NARS today, and I came to this realisation that I don't really like hip hop that much. I realised it today.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, yeah. Anyway, and they were talking about like where he grew up, and that all the white people moved out because they had more opportunities than the black people didn't have the opportunities,
so
they couldn't move out.
Yeah.
And then we'd criminalise all the people for being there.
Yeah.
It's insanity. It's pure insanity. And you see that in London, like the gentrification of certain neighborhoods as well. I mean, a lot of neighborhoods in inner city London. I this is through the grapevine, but I have heard of like, you know, families living in flats and being relocated after decades and decades of living there, you know, because that location was going to the highest bidder. So, I guess in conclusion, white people suck.
But I also think that the UK has done, I'm going to speak from a place that might be very ignorant because I haven't really like studied urban planning in London. But based on my experience living in London, when you look at council housing, the way that they've done it is like you're plugging in like social welfare living into different areas to encourage, and air quotes to people listening, encourage integration. But you put them in this like shitty fucking building. Sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, of course.
You put them in this like hideous building in like Westminster amongst all these like castles, and you expect like your neighbors to all somehow get along and be integrated and be friends.
Of course not.
I mean, in a lot of other countries, like I'm living in Switzerland right now, which, you know, is a very rich country, but does have a lot of different things when it comes to like integration, refugees and things like that, because it's actually non-EU. So they have a different, you know, whole policy around it. But the way that they do council housing here is that it's a percentage of every building. So your neighbors are literally people who are, so it's like your flat, that's your neighbor might be, and you don't know. It's like, you know what I mean? You might know if you know your neighbors or something like that, but you don't have this like othering, or you don't have like this like scary council flat that we don't walk there. You know what I mean? Because obviously like to like aggregate people who are like underprivileged into an area where there's other people. You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to create this. Yeah. And I think you see this, especially when I was living in Brixton. There's a lot of gentrification, but there isn't a lot of social mobility. So you have, like, all these really poor people and then all these, like, rich white people on top of them at, like, the bars. And, like, you know, like, it's just, it's not very, it's not very healthy, I think. And I don't think that you figured that very well.
Often I find, say, like, we had a lot of Eastern European people moving in around where I live, and everyone, like, there's loads of racists around here, and they've all got the right hump about it. And they're going, oh, they can at least speak our language. And then when they go to our schools, they kick off if there's any education, you know, to try and help them, because it's hindering their children. You're like, oh, your children are already fucked because you don't do anything but drink.
Like,
you can't have these standards if you're coming from a position of a ponce.
Yeah.
It just drives me mad.
It's a power struggle, right? Like, it's always like, it how can I, Lord, and this, for me, I mean, I'm last podcast we talked so much about colonialism, but it is colonial, right? Like, how can I own power over someone else? How can I own power over someone? That's where misogyny comes from. That's where racism comes from. Like, this need to sort of, like, be better than the person next because you are being, you are being held down by something, so you have to hold someone else down in order for you to not feel, like, squashed.
Yeah.
And I think that's really sad.
It's like this, like, ladder of, like, okay, I'm on this rung and I have to make sure that I'm above this rung.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, guys, we could all be on the same rung, or maybe just deconstruct the ladder.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just turn it horizontally.
Burn the ladder.
Let's just not have a ladder.
Yeah. You know what? Exactly. Let's turn that ladder horizontally.
Not a ladder, it's a bridge.
You were saying...
I'll try it.
Genius. Very good.
She's a genius.
Well, so you said before about if people feel that they're wrong and they're not and they don't deserve constantly, then that makes them ill. And for me, that was how I was kind of felt when I was growing up, and that's made me ill. And then I often think about people who are, if someone's gay and they assume that everyone's going to be against them or their parents aren't going to accept them, they're instantly kind of pushed into that bracket.
And
like within themselves, you know, before they even, potentially going to be frightened to come out, but they're just going to assume that everyone's going to be against them.
Yeah, of course.
And we just think that just ramps it up so much. It really does. And I don't think, you know, like when people are like, they're very judgmental about gay people, not for a moment they ever think about that.
Did you ever feel that growing up, Nick? Did you ever feel sort of like, you know, kind of othered, and did that have like an impact on your mental health?
Oh, yeah.
An internal, trap of some sort, you know, like an internalized othering too.
Yeah, I had the othering. I had, my granddad thinking I was gay when I wasn't gay. And then that made me think that everyone thought I was gay. And I was like, but, you know, when I was growing up, it's like, oh, God, you don't want to be gay, you know?
Yeah,
like something's wrong with me. And, like, even though I'm not even gay, I'm still being, I'm being punished in the same way as if I was gay and, like, great, how can I change myself, or like, what's wrong with me?
It's really
funny. Growing up, all of my friends were gay, there was like something, like we would just like be like drawn together like magnets. And I mean, like, I would consider myself bi now, but growing up I considered my sexuality was, or I considered it to be straight, but I mean, I was probably incorrect in that assumption. Anyway, because I felt sort of queer in my identity as this like weird ass Welsh Iraqi American, it was like these queers were attracted to these queers, and then it was like a queer magnet. And like, it was kind of this, when I feel like when you feel othered or you feel ostracized, you're like so attracted to others that have been exposed to that. And you sort of like really understand each other and kind of empathize with each other's plight. So it's really quite heartening and lovely in a way.
Oh, that's so important. If you can find your tribe,
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Finding your tribe.
Yeah.
Finding your, you know,
and like
your motley crew.
Totally. And I think that at least the good result, I don't know if you had the same experience, guys, but like the results for people who do kind of have like this bullying and all this sort of like, you know, issues they have to deal with growing up, you do tend to connect with really amazing people. Yep. You know what I mean? Like the people you do end up finding are like much more elevated. I always think that people who've experienced like strife and trauma and whatever tend to be very like interesting humans.
Yeah, exactly, much funnier.
Amen. Because a lot of the time through trauma we have to use humor, okay? Yeah. And then it like forces you to be really sharp.
Exactly. So,
thank you, trauma.
I think it's getting back to sort of, you know, celebrating people's choices and decisions to just be themselves. I think like, and tying in that in with how it's promoting sort of us being mentally healthier humans,
mm-hmm.
to find our paths and find our people and find, you know, there's a change in the air. Like we spoke to who's we had on, was it Anne, what's his name,
Ashley,
we had Ashley on, and he's you can say how you know him.
Well, he's a he basically kind of teaches mindfulness, but he's also he's like a champion for LGBTQ, and he's kind of quite, he's a bit of an activist himself as well.
I love it.
And that was enlightening conversation. It was just
because like speaking about sort of people's personal experiences. And people are starting to find like, because he was working a lot of youth culture. And
yeah.
We sort of went on. We had a chat just about how, like the kids have got shit sus now. Like
it seems
that like there's a lot more flexibility in society. Thank fuck. And also young people are now allowed to sort of be them and express themselves creatively or sexually or without being ostracized, and therefore making them happier. Fundamentally, we all should just be happy, right? I mean, it feels that there is something is starting. It's not done with, but it's starting. You know.
I would also credit Generation. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
I would credit Gen Z as being hyper critical of the generations above them. And so I think that there's a mechanism where they're basically like, oh, you guys are fucking whack. Like, why am I going to listen to the social constructs that you're imposing on me when like all of you are just like a hot mess, you know? Yeah. And then I feel like, because they are something like 80% of Gen Z is identifying as queer, which is like, you know, crazy at least in the Western world. It's crazy for us to see these stats. And I think that like, we have all these like boxes that we put people in, you know, for your gender, for your sexuality, for, you know, all, your disability, for everything. But the reality is like, you have like your gender expression. So like how you look, how you express yourself, your actual gender, what you were born, and then how you identify. And I think that these, and then also who you fuck, of course, but these people are like, as we grow, I believe, and I could be completely wrong, but I think everything is more dynamic than it seems. So I don't think that as we evolve, we're not going to be like gay or straight. No. And maybe we're not going to be like man and woman. Like maybe it's just all going to start to not matter anymore.
Yeah.
And you get this a lot with immigration where people say like, but then we're all just going to end up being brown. And it's like, and? Does that matter? You know what I mean? Like, is that a problem? Do we need to
have
a color?
We're all
going to
be racially ambiguous, and we can't have that. We can't. No,
like, you know what I mean? Like, we should be crossing barriers and all this sort of stuff. And I think the fluidity is like really the essence of growth.
Brave New World, when they basically kind of, they don't like emotion. They try and take the emotion out of everything, so people don't have relationships. They have sex. They're meant to have sex, but they don't have relationships.
Yeah.
So everything is so We pull all the emotion out of everything. That book blew me away when I read that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, emotion is crucial to our day-to-day. And I think often, you know, we're speaking about things that are beaten out of people. I think emotion and feeling is beaten out of boys and men. And then they have nothing to sort of guide them in life. I think emotions and feelings are such a crucial part of navigating your day to day.
Yeah. And I don't think that you can, like, I don't think that one should, you know, have the goal of having, because we glorify sex, right? Like, oh, you should have as much sex with as many people. But, like, is sex really fruitful without intimacy? You know, and I think that's also the bigger conversation is, like, does sex even matter? Then it's just, like, primitive, you know? Like, it's really, like, I'm not saying that you need to be, like, monogamous in any way, but, like, you do need to have, like, that human connection. Like, that's the point of sex to me, you know?
But, yeah, I think that's exactly right. Otherwise, it is just, everything, yes. Like, the connection, really, I think is almost, like, the goal of life. It is to connect with people.
Yeah. I think that is I was just going to say, you know, the what is the meaning of life? I think it's connection.
Yeah. No, but
it's
biologically,
connection, I mean, and making it better for other people, right?
Yeah.
Right?
And if we don't even want to be spiritual about it or anything, like, you could scale it all the way down to evolutionary biology and say what is hardwired in humans? It's to form community so that we can survive, right?
Yeah.
We can only survive in groups because we are weak, like, really weak. Unless we like make tools, have groups, can fight off things, like, whatever. Yeah. So without, like, it makes sense to me that your fulfillment is going to be based on your relationships and based on your community more than anything else.
Yeah. And one of our guests, Lee, that we were just talking about, they made this amazing analogy about, like, your relationships and sort of your life is like a chair. And when one of them is wobbly, the chair is going to be wobbly. Yeah.
So, like, if your romantic relationships are wobbly, then your chair is wobbly. If your friendship relationships are wobbly, and if you're, you know, professional, like, basically any form of your relationships that is not stable creates instability across the board. And that's why, like, if you're going through heartbreak, you're depressed, you know, if you only have your partner, you're also depressed. And that's what's wrong also during, like, COVID and the pandemic is the loneliness. It's really what's the biggest form of depression for us, I think.
I was just going to ask, like, so what does everyone think collectively the pandemic is going to do to connections and human connection? What are everyone's thoughts?
I think initially in London, loads of people are going to get pregnant. No, I'm joking.
Will be a boom. Typically, there's a boom after a trauma.
There may well
be. Yeah, yeah. COVID boom.
In all seriousness, though, I think I'd like to think that people are. I have experienced it actually, even in just sort of the recent pub openings and stuff. Like, I'd like to think that we're a little bit happier to see one another instead of just point blankly ignoring one another and actually listening to people when they talk, and like and taking note if someone is unhappy and going, "Are you all right?" Like, I mean. I got that from my mum. It's something that I hold very dearly about actually caring about people's day to day and people I don't know. I talk to people I don't know in the street. That's something I've always done. Not everybody does that, but there is.
Yeah.
It seems that is happening a bit. Yeah, people are actually aware of one another again a little bit.
I'm not convinced. Yeah. I think there's a numbness.
I don't think it'll last.
But. I think a numbness has gone through everyone where they're like, I think initially. When the lockdown stopped on the first time, there was this excitement and everyone kind of cared about each other. But I think the second time, everyone just kind of became numb.
Uh-huh.
So I noticed it. I went out a lot on the weekends and no one really knows what to say to each other. You know, it's kind of, no one's done anything, so there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, it's also boring.
No one wants to be negative. But it's just really, it's been really fucking boring. So I think when I get mentally ill, I go through a period and then I become just fucking numb. And I honestly kind of get this numb feeling from so many people I encounter.
It's like you care so much until you reach a point, and then you're just like apathetic.
Yeah, done. Whatever. Yeah. Apathetic's exactly the right term. That's my feeling on it at the moment. I'm waiting to see if things change, but I think because we are just drip fed a little bit more liberty, there's not enough to get really excited about.
Mm. We're so not you're trusting just, in it. Yeah.
Also. Yeah, you're just plodding. Well, it's all going to go wrong anyway. So this that negative mindset. I know it sounds really negative, but there was a part of me that was kind of really thought, oh, people are going to connect more. But I'm not sure. I'm not convinced at the moment.
I'm hopeful, man. What about you guys?
What do you reckon?
I'd like to describe myself as an optimistic realist in a way. Yeah. Like I think a big part of me is also in team. We're going to value each other a bit more. Mm. I think those that really experience loneliness and lockdown or disconnection are going to have or maybe value more meaningful connections and the ease in which that we can see each other now. I do think it's sort of, I hope for most people, it sort of shifted perspectives. It's kind of cleared up vision on what's like really important. Like, I don't know, especially in the workspace, I feel like there was so much presenteeism pre-COVID. Like, you had to be at work at 9 a.m. on the dot. And if somebody was 5 minutes late because of their trains, you know, half day, John.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, please shoot me. The guy's train was late. London's a mess. Yeah, yeah. Come on. I think there is going to... Yeah, I hope there's more flexibility and sort of meaning and connection. I hope so. And I feel in my water there might be.
I think that I don't know like if there's a right or a wrong, right? I think we could go in either direction and I think maybe people will be split. Yeah. But I did listen to a podcast recently and they were talking about integrity was a theme and the concept of like when you're doing something that's not like right for you, you feel it and you still do it often. So if you're in the marriage that doesn't work for you, it's because you're not living with integrity. If you say something that's mean and it says poorly, it's an issue with integrity. And I think what we've been doing a lot over our lives has been living to please other people for like external factors. And COVID gave us an excuse to say like, due to COVID, I cannot blah, 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 whatever it might be, right? Yeah. And I'm hoping that we are able to channel that integrity into the rest of our lives so that we're not making bullshit plans with the people we don't actually want to spend time with, for example.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or like going to work at 7 a.m. when like you're just doing it to like show face for the boss and that people aren't going to ask of you. And I think there's going to be a little bit more respect in general because there is like this like social pressure to like perform for other people all the time. Yeah. And I think here we had to like really become like insular and think about like what's good for my health, what's good for me and be more mindful. Also like I used to travel like a psychopath. I mean, I still travel, but like I used to fly to Asia, like testify. And then fly back for work all the time. I was traveling like crazy. And now if I take like an hour flight, like it takes me like 3 days to recover. And I'm like, if flying is really taxing on the body and I was flying like long distance, like 7 times a month, if not more, imagine what like physical like shape I was in, like inside my body, even though I felt and I looked good and whatever. It's just, you don't realize like until you start listening to yourself, like what is burnout? What is exhaustion? Like, am I happy? Am I fulfilled? Am I reflecting? Like we have space to sort of dig a little bit deeper than we, and have to be confronted also on these areas. Like also people who, like I have so much conflict with my family, but during COVID I haven't seen them at all. And I'm like craving to be with my family, you know? And you're like, oh yeah, like there are people and things that I'm not making enough time for.
I think as well. So I was talking to a good friend of mine and Tracy's about this. And like, I think what COVID forced us to do was to like stare in the face of our lives. Yeah. So we couldn't hide anymore. We couldn't lie. So if we didn't like our partners, it was kind of like we had to do something about it. If we didn't like our jobs, it was something we had to do about it. Yeah. Like we were just sort of like really sitting in the reality of sitting in our own realities like big time.
And we still are.
Of course. And we still are. So you kind of had nowhere to hide and you had to kind of like confront these really, really uncomfortable things, which sucks at the time, but then I guess it feels a whole lot better when you do confront them.
I mean, I was doing like vision boards and shit that I don't even believe in. You know what I mean? Like I was like trying to manifest my future. I mean, what I'll say is that in this moment in my life, I have to say that nobody around me is happy. Mm. And I don't know if it's just my friends or the circumstance or whatever, but it seems like everyone's kind of in like a shitty place right now. And it's not about being depressed or anything. Like, I don't think a lot of people, my friends don't seem to be actually too like discouraged, but they do seem to all be kind of in a shitty position, whether it's like in work or family or something. Like there's just this huge like stirring of the pot right now, and I'm hoping that we can kind of be like a phoenix and fly out.
I've been through moments when I thought I'm not being real, you know, I'm not being true to myself, and I'm doing shit that I hate. Why am I doing it? Stop it. And then like make the change. And that really rung true with me. That I've certainly been through that kind of thing myself loads. Have you been through that, either of you?
Like being completely out of integrity.
Have you had any like real low periods where you think, right, I've got to make changes?
I'm living in Switzerland, which is a job that I was really excited for. And then, basically I was losing my visa in London because I'm an immigrant, and I could choose between trying to hustle to get re-sponsored, or I was offered this job in Switzerland for like 2 years. They were chasing me, and it was for somebody that I had so much respect for. And I completely evangelized my boss, who ended up basically like being sort of dodgy, and like it was a whole thing, and I ended up burning out and all this stuff. So like I'm living in Switzerland by myself. Like I don't have anyone here. Like I'm completely alone doing a job that like wasn't, you know, in any way my dream job or what inspires me, feeling I don't have purpose, that I'm invisible, that like I could be dead in my flat and no one would even like see me. And like all I had in my life was like codependency with people who I was like emotionally attached to, that it was almost like perverse, and like I couldn't face with the fact that I was by myself, and like, you know what I mean, like just deeply unhappy with who I am, and like having like eating disorders, and just like, you know, trying to be skinny for fucking nobody, like no one seeing me, and like just you know, sitting in the reality of like that heaviness, but not recognizing that I was like in depression, but not being able to sleep at night, waking up with nightmares, having anxiety like crazy, but like not really attributing it to anything, and feeling like I'm this like privileged girl in an ivory tower in Switzerland, and I'm like crying every day.
I think so many people do that. Well, you know, there's people much worse off than me. And I'm like, you can't really think about it in those terms. You got to think about it in terms of, am I well or not? Have you pulled through? Where are you at now?
I started seeing a therapist. I was seeing a therapist after this stuff with work happened, because I was literally like, I was told that I was fired, which wasn't true. It was like this whole dodgy thing. And so I basically was sitting at the train station for like 4 hours, not realizing my train had come. And I was sitting there, and then I realized it'd been 4 hours, like the craziest moment of my life. And so I was like, okay, I need to see a therapist. And so I saw a therapist for about a year. And this therapist was like, she just looked sick constantly. It was like, she was like bored and like looking at the clock. I would tell her things, and she'd be like, well, you're pretty self-actualizing, and you seem to really know yourself. So like, I have nothing to contribute to, like, you know, your problems, and you seem to like be aware of them. So like, what do you want me to say? Just not very helpful. And then
so much value.
I mean, it was terrible.
Did you get a refund?
And like, no, really, it was terrible.
I've had therapy like that before.
I mean, I tried for a year, you know, maybe it'll click, maybe it'll click, blah, blah, blah. And then after a year, I posted on like an expat Facebook group, which is like, you know, the worst sentence you could say, but helpful. And I was like, hey, I'm trying to find something more holistic, blah, blah, blah. And I used to be like a yoga teacher, and like, I like health and wellness and stuff like this in general. And someone recommended me this, this therapist so I was told she's a psychologist, and when I went to see her, she's also a hypnotherapist, clinically trained, mostly works with like children who have trauma, which like I was not interested in, because once I did it in like a yoga studio and I was like, this is bullshit. And then she also has done like a professional coaching, and she's also really into like spirituality and all this like stuff. And so she started doing like sessions with me where she was also doing hypnosis. And she like reframed the parasympathetic nervous system, the way that like my brain would associate with things. So like I had when I was 18, my college was, and this is very dark. Did I tell you guys this last time? Maybe I told you this. But my college was shot up by a gunman, which is in Canada, which like, no, it just doesn't happen. And it was like devastating. And like 38 of my friends were shot and things like this. Only one person died, but it was like a huge tragedy in Montreal. Yeah, and then 2 weeks later, my neighbor, who was like really good friends of mine, killed his whole family in their sleep. So it was like a really like the craziest, you know, thing that could happen to you. And so I had like these crazy PTSD nightmares anyways for my whole life. It's been like, I'm 32 now, so it was literally almost half my life. My therapist started doing hypnosis to me, and I was telling her I have these nightmares. And so she did like a visual thing. It wasn't like she was, it was really weird because I felt completely conscious, right? And ever since I started seeing her, the nightmares completely disappeared. So it's really about like when you experience trauma, when you've experienced depression, anxiety, like whatever your mental health issues are, they're hardwired into your body. And you can, and she said to me, like, you can either wobble through life trying to avoid your triggers and you know, like, this is going to set me off, this is going to set me off, or you can sort of reprogram your mind. And there's different ways you can do that, like EMDR, which is super effective, hypnosis, which is very similar. And that just, it allows for you to speak to parts of your brain that is just like in you that you can't access otherwise, like the subconscious. Yeah.
So, I had hypnotherapy with a therapist very similar to the one you've just been describing. He was also a life coach, also talked about spirituality, and that was the game changer for me. Like, and he would do things with, you know, like visualizations with colors and things like that.
Cool.
And like, I'll be walking around feeling really miserable, and then I'll notice something blue. And then I don't feel as miserable.
Yeah,
and it is. It's just. It's just.
Yeah, because your mind works in symbols, not in words.
Yeah. Yeah, like Jung says. I've been looking at Jung a lot recently. And,
Carl Jung, genius.
But it's so true what you say, and trauma is one of the hardest ones to kind of get at often.
Amen.
It really is.
But trauma can be. Like a little thing, you know, trauma is different for every person. So you don't need to have your school shut up to call it trauma, right? Like it could be your mom yelling at you when you're a kid and you know what I mean? You don't even know what your traumas are. And the things that might be the most traumatic for you might actually be not traumatic for someone else at all.
Yeah.
It's super interesting.
Seriously, I really get into that. I've been, especially going through a lot of that kind of stuff myself and understanding trauma. I've learned a lot through doing the podcast, really, talking to people with PTSD, so cool. People who have been in, you know, been in like in wars and that kind of thing. Oh, wow. So you're feeling better?
Yeah, I mean, it comes and it goes. Like, you kind of have to be consistently doing the work.
I'm the kind of person who
like, if I don't have to do the work, then I don't do the work. Yeah, and like, there's also, you know, Wim Hof, the cold water dude that's like everyone's obsessed with.
He's the best.
So he has like a breath meditation that my therapist gave me, which is like, it's 10 minutes and it's 30 breaths times 3. Have you guys done it?
Yeah, I've done it. Yeah.
I've done it.
I'll send you it. So I can't do the cold water thing. Yes.
No,
like
you
I'm,
can do
I'm
the
just,
breathing's really good though.
But the meditation thing is like, it's so effective. You have to take time to like lie down and breathe, which like I don't do really for myself, but if I'm having like bad anxiety, I'll do it, but it completely like reprograms the way your brain thinks. And also just like, you know, being able to, for me, I'm very fiery. So being able to step out of the situation and like go for a walk, change your environment, like do something that doesn't just let you stew. Cause I'll just like get so sad and so sad until I'm like, just like a puddle on my floor. So it's important that you just don't let yourself melt like that, you know?
Amen.
How about you then, Jenna? Tell me about you and your brain.
My mental health journey. I mean, I guess it's a journey without a destination, right? It's an ongoing sort of flexing relationship with yourself and your head. But I guess dissimilar to Tracy, there wasn't sort of like one specific instance or a couple of specific instances, but I think so I have four sisters and my parents were culturally very dissimilar and Welsh, Iraqi, American, raised Muslim in New Jersey, all these sort of different aspects of my identity. There was like a lot of sort of different labels I was like working out through my like young baby heads. And my parents' relationship was quite like volatile. Right. So lots of peaks and troughs and lots of fights and sort of like last minute trips to the UK to go where my mother's parents were. So I was very, very close to my grandparents, my Welsh grandparents. So like for me, they were... I always say this, but I'm like, I think my grandparents are like a big reason why I'm like relatively stable. And you know, the rest of my family is great as well. Like, you know, I'm not discrediting their amazingness. But yeah, it was just like sort of rocky upbringing, very feast or famine. Sometimes we were like bawling in New Jersey, like big house, awesome cars, like everything was great. And then like, there would be moments where my parents like max out their credit cards and there was like nothing. And I remember from like a young age, like really feeling that anxiety, like, oh my God, mom and dad are in like hot water. I need to do something. But I was like eight. It's like, what the fuck are you going to do? You're 8 years old. So I think just being sort of subject to that volatility, like me and my sisters, we sort of all developed our own kind of issues later in life, or just sort of like obstacles in our way. And it's funny how it's like manifested so differently for all five of us. For my oldest sister, you know, and well, actually my two eldest sisters, they sort of grapple with their health, their physical health a bit more. Whereas the three younger sisters, we've really struggled with our mental health. I remember when I moved to the UK and like first experiencing panic disorder. And I remember being on the train and like fucking feeling like I wasn't in control of my own body. And I was like, this is so weird. Why am I so anxious? Like nothing's wrong. And I was like really trying to like talk myself down. And I was like, what is happening right here? And then of course, when that moment happened, I was like, I think I have to see a therapist. And I was 24 at the time, and 6 years later I'm still seeing the same therapist. And like honestly, she is such an angel, like a real she's really, really helped. And I'm lucky enough to, she was the first therapist I ever saw. My mother dragged me to a therapy session with her therapist. So it was me and my mom and her therapist. And I think her therapist wanted to be friends with her. And then this therapist decided to diagnose me with PTSD in our first session. And I was just like, I don't like this lady. I'm not seeing her again. So that was a false start.
Yeah, you need to stick with your therapist.
You do.
Oh my God, yeah. Chemistry.
Yeah.
And you know, not diagnose you like the first time they see you. You know, they should get to know you first.
At least fill out a survey.
I think it's funny.
Exactly. At least learn my first
name. The attitudes to therapy, like you guys are kind of seem to have been generally fairly open to therapy. I started having therapy when I was about 9, and then I've had it on and off ever since, and I've learned to roll with it and then embrace it. But like the idea of, like, I didn't tell anyone I was having therapy. It's like, you know, you don't mention that. And I think that's a very, I have friends who are American, and they're quite open about having therapy. It's like, yeah, we all have therapy. And I'm like, that's so cool. Because like, you know, sure. How many people could do with a bit of therapy?
Everybody. It's more of a metric for your health than it is a metric of your unhealth, really, right? Like,
exactly.
I think the biggest problem with therapy, I have this friend in Portugal who's like kind of drug addict, and he's just like really in like a spiral right now. And like, there isn't really a mechanism to get someone to have mental health unless they're completely off the ladder, you know, like they're completely gone. Or like, even he identifies as like needing to have some support, but he can't financially afford it. And I think that this is the biggest problem, is it's like therapy and psychology and mental health is a luxury. And I think that it's not, it shouldn't be a luxury. It should be a necessity. Like, especially after COVID, like we're all fucked up, you know, like everyone should have access to support services. And it's just not something that's available. I mean, you can like get your doctor refer you in the UK, you get your doctor refer you, the doctor then like, prescribed you like five sessions from the NHS and then they put you with a random therapist that like you don't choose. You have five sessions and she determines whether or not you need more. Like, that's not helpful, you know?
No, it's funny, that's sort of ongoing care.
You know, Jenna, you said earlier like that, you know, some of your sisters had physical illnesses and then some of you had mental illnesses. And I think quite often we fail to see the connection between those two. Like my therapist, I was saying, he's quite a strong advocate for that. If you're, you know, you're feeding yourself bad shit and you're telling yourself bad shit, then you'll get ill. And it was only when I saw a consultant psychiatrist, and they were like, and I was just like, I'm ill all the time. I'm constantly ill. And they were like, yes, because you've got clinical depression, you know. But no one ever says it. Doctors don't even mention that kind of thing.
It's insane, right?
I remember I walked into the
I was just gonna say, it's so crazy the connection between the physical and the mental. And of course they can sort of, like, you know, your body can be amazing and then, you know, your mind not so amazing, like, you know. Sometimes I guess they don't work in tandem, but most of the time when you're exercising and you're sleeping and your body is like working for you, your mind kind of like kind of works with it. And I just know, as somebody who has really grappled with anxiety and moments of real panic, I know running has been like a saving grace, and just going to the gym, like, it's like, I never, it's so funny, I guess there's this whole like Fitspo culture of like six teen pack and like a fucking Belfie and all this stuff working out, and it's like, I don't know. I just think the mental health benefits of exercise are so profound and just life-changing. And for me, that's the only reason I really go to the gym. Like, I only go to the gym because of my head.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The thing is, the mind and the body is connected. Mind is part of the body. You know what I mean? Like, we see them as separate entities, but we're not walking around with floating heads, are we? Like, your brain is part of your body. And if you're not, if you're not nourishing yourself, and like, if you are swallowing negative shit, and I don't mean just food, but also food, but if you're swallowing like a negative talk track, you'll make yourself ill. And if you're not listening to your body, and you're overworked, like burnout, for example, you're working so hard, and you're getting physically ill because your body's saying you're too stressed. And it's the easiest thing in the world to tell someone, like, don't be so stressed, avoid stress. But, like, you can't do it unless your environment, like, is prescriptive of that, you know? So it's really important that we do live in, like, a way that is integral for us. And equally, like, listen, I'm a terrible runner. I'm like, I'm such a depressant person. And like, my mind is saying, like, you're too tired, don't do it, give up. But like, I was just
going to say, like, I combated that because I hate running. Like, I'm a stocky, weighty dude. So like, I just decided to start go on massive, massive hikes and just only stop when I decided to, my body couldn't take any more. And then it got too easy, so I put weight pack on
That's
me.
Really helped you, though, hasn't
and,
it?
And like averaging sort of 15 really miles really roughly helped. When I do it. And it's unreal because, and the first time I ever did it, right, I was in a really, really shitty place after splitting up with the mother of my children. And I got really drunk and up before my daughter's birthday. And I missed taking her to school. So the first time I did it was, and that was like quite traumatic for me, actually. And it was pretty shitty, like having split up with her, and I fucking hated myself. And I walked from my flat in South Woodford to Bond Street, which is about, I don't know, 10 miles or maybe 15 miles or something. It's a good old walk, but I just didn't stop. And it was like it was about 8:45 in the morning. No, that's rubbish, 8:45 in the morning. Otherwise, I would have made the school run, right? So, dickhead. But I just carried, and by the time I got to it, I'd come to a resolve that I was in a really destructive, horrible place, and that thing stuck with me like forever, really. And that's always been my thing of exercise. Like, I go to the gym and stuff now and again, but that hiking situation, like, I bought proper boots and stuff and a weight vest thing, and the phone doesn't get looked at, and I take stock up sufficient food, and I just look around and go in the woods for fucking hours, six hours.
Well, the power of nature is awesome. Yeah, like, they say, even if you have a But they say that even looking at a photo of nature has health benefits to you. And when we're, especially in London, like we're so landlocked, like we don't get a lot of nature in London, although there are some beautiful parks and stuff like that. Did you ever think about doing, is it La Camina or El Camino? Mm. You know that walk from like France to Spain? It's like a pilgrimage.
Yeah,
everyone I know is like doing this right now, which I think is super interesting. I think you would love it. It's really cool. I had a friend who like went through this crazy divorce, and she did 6 months. Like she did a 6 month walk every day. It's crazy.
Really?
But she started off with like a backpack full of things, and she said by like, you know, by a month in, you just don't care anymore about anything. Like you don't care about physical things. You know, you're like, I don't need this. Everything that you're like anxious about needing, you just don't need. So you just have like your water and your food and like the rest of it doesn't matter. Like you don't need the book, you don't need the fucking map, like you just go, you know. I think it's interesting.
That resonates really hard with me. Like I've used that, like during lockdown I moved like 3 times or something. My parents split up like a week after me moving in with them. Like it was a lot of shit happened, and it was just like I'm on my own here. I mean, the only saving grace was around the corner from Nick, so that was helpful.
Oh, okay. Thank God
there was someone. But but like it, yeah. No, I was in a shitty relationship as well. That was sort of going off and on. It was just a bit weird. And again, it was like I remembered that walking was something that I'm good at. it's not just putting one foot in front of the other. It's actually clearing your head and I talk to myself a shitload. God, I say shit way too many times. A lot.
Are we allowed to swear here?
Yeah. Yeah, right. I talk to myself a lot, and by doing that, I created a dialogue where I managed to wash out all the negativity by the time I got somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, it really helped, because the gym situation for me is a little bit. It's a little bit testosterone fueled mirror kissing. I'm not about that, man. I don't give a shit about that. But like, I know that I can get the same. I can 100% get the same mental benefit and physical benefit if you walk on a gradient with 20 kg in a backpack, which is hard, right? But when it gets easy and you use it as a way to clear your head, it's just amazing, like. And you feel unreal. Like, I mean, I did an accidental marathon a couple of months ago, and it was 26 point something, which was just under miles. And like, I sat down in my friend's flat, and like my body started to convulse, right? Because we hadn't like sufficiently have run out of gels. Yeah. So I had some gels, had a hot bath and that. And then all of a sudden, like my endorphins literally just went through the roof. And I was like, oh my God. And it felt amazing, you know.
It really is the best.
And we started sort of talking about, so it's Simon who was on this podcast. I go walking with him. And we were like, we then sort of laugh about the conversations we had and the silly noises we were making around and like the stuff we saw and looking at the pictures and being like, remembering all of that good stuff and all of the negatives that we started talking about literally lasted an hour. Out of a six-hour hike, so man, I'm so addicted to that.
Mindfulness thing as well, isn't it? Yeah. Like they say that in mindfulness that you don't need to be meditating as such. No. You just need to be constant, being present and bringing your head in. So you could just be concentrating on your footsteps. You could be looking at the sky. Mm. And all of those things bring you into the now rather than into the past or the future.
I also think that there's like a part of you that's like, when you're swallowing all this negativity or these problems or whatever it is, you do need to get them out of you. And I think that the way that you walk, like you end up having to confront yourself with the thoughts, like being quiet with yourself and having to confront what you're hearing yourself say is one way. And another way that my therapist gave me was actually physically writing, like in a notebook.
Because whenever you
swallow or you push these feelings, especially like men, you know, like we repress our feelings so much and whatever, being able to physically write it out is a really good way of like expressing yourself and just like literally like expressing the problem out of you. And if you keep it in you, then it doesn't go anywhere, you know. It crystallizes inside you.
Yeah, I draw or I paint or I bash a guitar and that gets it out for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I can't do exercise. I'm, It's that thing, isn't it? It's like I just feel too awkward. I feel tall and weird, and I've never felt comfortable doing anything like that. And that just goes back to my childhood.
Yeah. Of course.
But what it kind of to come back on something that Tracy said, which I think is like one of the most important things, is that you've always got to be working on it. So for me, I've always got to be working on my mental health. The minute I stop, then I get ill. That's kind of the same with doing exercise as well, isn't it? It's like literally, if you stop doing it, then you start feeling shit. It's like you actually have to be in the game of looking after your body and brain. You actually have to be doing it. And if you're not, and it's a big ask, you know, it is. But, yeah, if you don't actually do it, I always kind of put it down to like doing the 12 steps, you know, that kind of you're always an addict, and the only reason you're not actually kind of an active addict is because you're working on it all the time.
It takes a lot of work, and I think one of the other things that has been helpful to me is learning that you can't trust your own thoughts. And we interviewed this guy named Anu, who is brilliant, and he's queer, and he's queer and he's brown, that's what I would say. He's, you know, he's a person of color, and he's queer, and he's grappled a lot. He's super educated, like the superstar, but he almost committed suicide. He was so depressed, and most of it was like systemic, like just feeling like he didn't belong, feeling something was inherently wrong with him, even though it wasn't like he fucked up something, you know, just like we don't realize like the different barriers that other people experience. But he was standing on the windowsill about to jump out the window, and he was thinking, you know, I'm going to jump. And he had a moment where he thought, I can acknowledge that I'm thinking about jumping, so I am not my thoughts. And therefore, if I don't listen to that thought, maybe I can just not jump. And then he like started this journey. I mean, it was a really incredible interview we had with
him. The most powerful feeling in the world. Oh, my the therapist I was talking about, he said to me, you know, you don't have to listen to your thoughts. Your thoughts, you know, your thoughts are the product of everything you've been through in your life, everything you've heard and everything you've seen and everything everyone has said to you. And they're trying to protect you from, you know, fucking up. And you don't have to listen. And I was like, what?
I don't have to listen?
And then, now I can almost witness myself having those thoughts.
Which is meditation.
Yeah.
That is the point of meditation. It's not about silencing your mind. It's about understanding, like, the thoughts are not in control of you.
Yeah.
And I think it's super interesting, because at some point, like, if you also can listen to the thoughts, sometimes you hear that the thoughts actually sound like somebody else. And that might have been your mother or your father or the school bully or whoever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you are actually not your thoughts, and you're programmed to hear things that have been repeated to you over time.
Oh, it's so funny. In therapy, if I'm saying something that's extra harsh on myself, my therapist will go, Who is that, Jenna? Who is that? What is that voice? And I'm like, it's this person. That's who it is. And we're sponges when we're kids, right? We just soak up all this messaging from our upbringing, from media. I just finished this show called Alone, where they have to spend all this time out in the wild and see how long they can survive for. And something that they all say when they leave is that their mind feels so much calmer the thoughts are less, I guess, like jarring and hectic. And I think that when you live in a city, or, you know, you live in a busy part of the UK, it's really hard to keep your head clear.
It really is.
Yeah.
I also think you shouldn't put, like, it's, you have to do the work. You have to do the work, you know, work out, eat well, whatever.
Yeah, of course.
Meditate. But also, like, be gentle to yourself. Like, you don't have to run a marathon just to exercise, you know, just like sometimes my goal for myself is like, go outside today. Just go outside, like, step outside today. You know, like, it's okay to not be extreme, you know?
Yeah. It's that part. Yeah.
Like, put on a pair of trousers when you're about to go to work.
Like, pants too.
often say to people when they're feeling low, I'm like, they're kicking themselves in the teeth just for feeling low. And you're like, it's okay to feel low sometimes. You feel low for a bit. Mm. It's all right. You'll feel low for a bit. You know, try and do something, one thing tomorrow. You know, and it isn't, it's like, it's okay. I often find myself saying to people, it's fine. You know, it's all right. Don't make it worse by telling yourself off for feeling like shit.
Because
sometimes you feel like
shit. And I'm hoping that COVID is also like, when we talk about integrity and stuff, I'm hoping that COVID has done that also for us, because, you know, before we used to like, we would pressure ourselves so much to do the thing or whatever. And it's like, I have become so unconcerned if someone says to me like, hey, I'm like, I don't think I can come tonight. I'm like, it's fine. Don't come. Yeah. You know, like, don't, it's not like you don't need to make an excuse. Like, just, it's also okay to just not go. Like, it's fine. It's okay to like, right now it feels if I do one thing, if I go to the grocery store, then I'm like exhausted. You know, like it's, we're in a period right now that is so confusing. And I think that we need to keep that with us. You know, maybe we're going to go back to normal. Maybe we'll be in the new normal, whatever. But the point is, respect yourself and don't pressure yourself, but then also do take care of yourself. I think it's important not to live in ignorance completely.
Exactly.
And I think that's what you see with old people, not to tangent, guys, sorry, but like a lot of like elderly people are really like crippled because they've had like years of lack of mobility, and they have no flexibility in their full of inflammation because they've not moved, you know, and people sort of like, they're kind of stuck, like physically stuck, because they've just like been stagnant. And a lot of it is because of the neglect of the younger generations that should be, you know, creating better social care and stuff for the elderly, of course, and a lot of like the isolation, the loneliness. But like, you know, what we're experiencing COVID is often what these people experience all the time. Like, I have grandparents who are, you know, living in complete isolation. People aren't really going to see them. Like, and a lot of us do. And I think that's the important thing, is that like, you can live well until you're 100 years old. But if you stop trying, and if you stop caring, and if you become sort of complacent, and you listen to your thoughts, and you think it hurts to move, it hurts to walk, I can't do another step, things like this, also you will then stay stuck.
Yeah
You got to keep I'm not using the term exercising, like you have to exercise, but keep keep at it, keep going,
exercising,
keep taking
your
care of yourself. Exercising your lust for life, exercising your passion for each of your days.
And the more people you have around you who can like support you on that journey, also the more you will be, because like, it's so, if you're alone, like it's so easy to give up.
For sure. I mean, I don't know, just being alive itself is like a crazy blessing, right? When you think about like how our moms even, you know, conceived us, it was like a 1 in 1,000,000 chance that the sperm did something to the egg. I should know this, but you know, even the chance, even the reason, the stork, even the stork safely delivering us to our caretakers,
we've all seen
is a blessing. And like, you know, life can be like a real hoot sometimes, and it's then it just, you know, it's over in a flash. So I guess we just have to make sure that we're having a great time at this party.
Enjoy the little things, I think, is what is normally my advice. Enjoy the little things. The little things are normally the best things. You don't need big things.
I think I'm going to start golfing.
I had a go golf a while ago, and I really, really liked it. Just going to a driving range, smacking the balls. And like, if you manage to hit them well, it feels amazing.
Yeah, it does.
And it's a really good way of letting off steam. And it's not actually that hard. It's not.
If you do like a short course, I mean, I've never golfed, and I speak like an expert. But if you do like a short round of golf, you have to walk as well.
You do.
And there's like a little goal, a little destination. You focus on something, and then you do the next one. I mean, I think it's my friend who's pregnant in Spain. She's like, I'm going to start golfing, and I was like, okay. And now that I'm thinking about it, like, it kind of combines a lot of what we're talking about.
It does.
Like, and they're normally nice places.
Nature. Yeah.
You get to wear, like, dodgy trousers. Do you know
what I mean?
Perfect. Like, what else
get
you
drunk.
Need?
Yeah.
Let's get drunk after.
That's important.
Amazing.
I was going to say, guys, I need to... Have you heard of Harrison Ward and Fel Foodie? So he basically combines like talking about mental health, hiking, cooking outdoors, all into one. That's sort of, yeah, his platform is all about kind of taking care of yourself and experiencing the great outdoors. And, you know, he's had a really interesting sort of journey with his mental health. So if you guys want me to introduce you to him, let me know.
Yeah, please. Yeah, it sounds amazing. Yeah.
That'd be great.
It's definitely All right, guys, we've had you for over an hour now. It's been another amazing conversation.
I'm like addicted to our conversations. I think
it should just be a regular catch up.
I can't wait till we meet in person one day.
Yeah.
We can go golfing.
Yeah.
We can do crazy golf.
I'm all over.
I love crazy golf.
I'm so bad at putting, guys. I can drive. I can hit it further, but I can't putt.
I can't wait. I'm gonna get my pink check trousers. This is it.
Oh, I love it. And the hats with the bows on and the bows, the thing.
Exactly. Have a lovely to talk to you. Let's definitely meet up in the not too distant future.
Amazing. Yeah. And we'll have to have you on our podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay.
Thank you guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Have a lovely evening. Take care, ladies.
See you guys.
Take care. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.